I'm Richard Porter.
And I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith and Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars, and this week, things in our neighbourhoods. How are you today?
I've peaked a little early on coffee.
Uh-huh.
Which means I've done some jobs quite quickly, but now I'm slightly breathless. I feel like I've got to reset the timing on my heart. You know, I'm just gonna have to like just get the old the strobe light out and just check my points and condenser because I'm fluttering a little. I'm not gonna.
Have you got a high idle?
I've got a very high idle. Exactly. It's cold choke.
Yeah.
Yeah. As we've discussed before, sort of unnecessarily high idle speed. It doesn't warrant the activities that I'm doing. I've actually had quite a depressing last hour of going through some. It's been way overdue going through some old clothes, and realizing that most of them don't fit me.
Why? So, why not?
Because I'm not going to lie. There's some COVID style timber. Around my middle that I'm not I've just put on weight over since about March, and it's really unusual for me. I've never not been able to fit into my clothes since I've been an adult until now. I'm sort of hating myself at the moment. I might go for a run every day for the next 4 weeks until I go lame and then hit myself with twigs.
Have you got that sense that you used to have after the summer holidays when you were at school, when you would go to put your school uniform on? And if your parents hadn't bought a new school uniform for you, it felt like someone had been into your cupboard and just shrunk everything.
I do feel a bit, yeah. I put a couple of pairs of jeans on and go, not a chance. And then I've couple of T-shirts. You're like, clearly, Johnny, you've got a belly there. That's just, it's not right. Doesn't work. So I've had a bit of a clothing cull.
Well, it's quite hasty. I mean, could you not just sort of sit on them? Because I had a thing where I started the lockdown period with, as I think many people did, do you know what? I'm just going to sit very still and drink as much booze as I've humanly got in the house, and then I'll see how that goes. And after a bit, I thought, oh, I think I know how this goes. This goes into alcoholism and destitution, and it's quite dangerous. I should probably pull back from this dive.
Yes, you should.
So I tried to drink a little bit less, but then also I started running again, and I've been running quite a bit.
When you say a bit, what are you talking? Twice a week? More or less?
No, I'll do three or four times a week.
Oh, you bug.
And I'll mix it up a bit. So sometimes, do you know what's funny as well? Anyone who's ever been running will probably know this. It's all new to me because I'm not naturally an exercisey kind of person. But where once I would sort of do like, I wasn't even measuring it, but I would say approximately sort of 3 kilometres or something. And I'd probably have to stop a couple of times to cough my own lungs up. Ooh. And then suddenly you can just go further and not even think about it. And now what I would term a short run is 5K. That's my minimum. I don't tend to do anything short than that.
That's acclimatisation.
Now, the reason I bring this up, not to boast, because in light of your predicament.
What you're saying is you've never felt or looked better in the last decade.
I'm not sure about that.
Versus old Chumbawamba at the other end of the phone line.
Chumbawamba.
He gets knocked down, but he gets up again, although he's slightly fatter than he was.
Yeah, but no, I'm 45. He gets knocked down. He goes, ooh. Thinks about it for a bit and then makes another funny noise as he tries to get up again. And one of his knees makes a noise like listening very closely to some Rice Krispies that have just had milk poured on them. That's me.
Snap, cackle and pop. It's actual knee joints.
Now, that is genuinely one of the only things that worries me about going running is that I'm just hastening the demise of my knees and the accelerated incoming of a knee replacement or something. Because I do a few squats in the kitchen to warm up if I'm going out in the morning.
And
the first squat, honestly, it sounds like someone's just got the Rice Krispies on the go behind me.
What, someone's snapping dry twigs in the background?
Yeah. Yes, someone's trodden on some very dry bracken just behind me.
Or does it, you know, when you first start, when I first like warm up for a run. I'll do some sort of side steps like you see professional footballers do. I don't even know what you call them. And then I've got a route round the back lanes round here, and I feel it doesn't necessarily sound the same, but you know that really awful sound of someone dragging a trolley jack across a workshop floor.
Oh yeah, they never drag nicely, do they?
They just sound awful, and it just sounds like something's going to break, or it makes everybody on edge.
Yeah,
that's how I feel like my lower body feels sometimes when I start dragging.
Why do they even bother putting wheels on trolley jacks? Because they're clearly not able to cope with the weight of the trolley jack. They always sound shit when they're dragged across the floor, don't they?
They do, because they've got, I guess they've got to have metal wheels because of the load bearing. But I wish they had nice squidgy skateboard. You know, there's really lovely hard rubber skateboard wheels where there's something very special about them. Can't someone invent, like you say, quality, quieter jacks that do the job? Mm.
Yeah,
the trolley jack's a great thing to have. It's absolutely vital to have a trolley jack about my person. But I'd like a quieter one. They're a bit fucking. In fact, they're a bit like one of the. They're a bit like a really gobby kid in the playground, the one that narrates everything but hasn't actually got anything important to add to the conversation.
What?
You know, that's because there was. I had to go to the skate park with my son yesterday. And there's always a touch and go whether it's just going to be full of gobshites, but actually it was a good vibe, and I was pleased. And then this kid turned up who he clearly only ever been to skate park like twice in his life, and was just shouting everything he was doing to everyone around him. Don't get me wrong, he might have had a personality disorder. I don't actually know. But it started to grate on me really early on. It was really disturbing my eBay app cruising, I've got to say. So, you know, there's me trying
Pipe
to find
down,
a master
lad,
cylinder.
I've got a Manta here.
Yeah, well, I was looking for a particular master cylinder, and then, you know, dickweed on the micro scooter keeps shouting, providing me with no information at all. I think I've just got a bit annoyed because I had that, and then my son's just obsessed with watching Minecraft tutorials on YouTube, which is just a shouty American kid with earphones on. And you're like, do you know what? Is it possible for you to deliver the information about your hacks and about your cheats without just being so shouty and fucking annoying? Is that possible?
Yeah. You know, sometimes I think we've probably both been prone to grumbling about some car YouTube and social media people, but when you see gaming people, it makes you glad for what we've got. I'd take any amount of people who can't string a sentence together about a new Porsche compared to the guys who are going, hey, look, this, oh my god, he's using this room.
Well, it's just like, if you've got that much energy cooped up in your bedroom, I think you need to go somewhere. It's like owning a racehorse and keeping it in the spare room, isn't it? It just needs to get out and, like, smoke some energy. Just get out of there. Just want one of these professional gamers to just go out for a sprint, put the energy drink down, and, for goodness sake, get some balance. Anyway, obviously, I just sound like an old git having a moan.
Yeah, well, you know.
Didn't want to say anything, did you? You just didn't want to say anything.
Fits. Well, anyway, I'm boasting about going running, but I haven't been able to go running the past week or 2 weeks because after I rang you from the new Defender, we made that show that lots of people moaned about. The sound wasn't very good.
That's the only podcast we've ever had with bad sound. I have to, you know, credit to us.
Yeah, but anyway, so yes, it was a bit of it wasn't our finest sounding episode, but you know, I was excited about the new Defender and we wanted to talk about it. But I got home that evening having dropped off the new Defender, got back into my old Defender and driven from Warwickshire back to London.
Yeah.
And I got caught in a bit of traffic. There was a bit of a snarl at an accident as I came to London. And I was doing a lot of low speed, first to second, and I slowed down again back to first, kind of city type driving. Now, the clutch in my Defender, you know, is a bit on the hefty side.
It's manual, yeah, very manual.
And I got home, and it was a beautiful evening. I'd had a lovely day, and I thought, I'd go for a run. That'd be a good idea. So I went for a pretty brisk 5K run.
Okay.
And when I got back, my calf was kind of hurting a bit. And then it sort of kept hurting. And then the next time I tried to go for a run, it started hurting and I kept on running, and which was a mistake, I think. And then anyway, so yeah, hurty calf, stretching it out, trying to make it better. But it's been pretty achy. And I think it's because I went for a brisk run after having operated a Land Rover Defender in traffic. A well-known sporting injury.
I've had the little bit of that on the Charger.
Oh, really?
Charging knee. I've called it charging knee. Yeah, there's definitely... It's when you're in congestion and, like you say, the clutch knee just starts to take a bit of a pounding. And because you haven't got your adrenaline up, because you're not doing anything fast, it's not like you're driving it hard on a track or whatever. You're just, you know, trying to survive through the congestion.
Yeah.
It's not great, is it?
How
it's
did
not
people
great.
Cope? It's just reminding me of something. Do you remember, this is very arcane, but hey, we're here now. Do you remember how the Mark III Golf, when it came out in, what, 91-ish?
Yeah, 92, yeah.
And famously at the time, it was quite quickly given a load of stick for not being as well made as the Mark II.
Yes, it really wasn't. Yeah.
And one of the things that it became clear was wrong with that car, as quality corners had been cut, was that the glove box, you remember the glove box was mounted very high up on the passenger side of the dash?
Yes.
And the lid dropped down. And
yes.
You see, even now, if you see a Mark III Golf on the street, you look as you go past it, and I can be pretty certain that the glove box will be open. Not in that way that people do sometimes when they want to show potential thieves that there's nothing in the car worth nicking. It's just fallen open.
And absolutely, I know the one. Yeah, yeah.
But I remember once jipping a bloke who'd got a Mark III Golf about it and going, no, they're not the good Golf, though, are they? They're not, just kind of like, you know, the evil Golf. And then I was trying to suggest that there was a medical condition for people who regularly passengered in those cars called Mark III knee, which was caused by having the glove box lid constantly twatting against your knees as you drove along. Don't think this bloke found it very amusing, but I was being a bit of a twat to it.
Have you ever owned... I had a Mark III Golf GTI.
Did you?
Well, I bought it off one of the publishers of Max Power after I'd left, and I'm trying to remember why. I think it's because they needed... It was a car that had been used for some promo, like testing some products and things, and no one really knew what to do with it. I got wind that they needed to get rid to make and to get some cash back in the back door or whatever. So I made them a silly offer for it and said, I'll buy it off you for this, but my offer only stands for 24 hours. I'm sure the publisher went, yeah, all right, Johnny, have it. And I bought it and drove it home the day after. And as soon as I got it home, I got a call from the accounts department to say, have you bought the Golf? And gave me the registration number. And I was like, yeah, I have. And they were like, oh, we're not supposed to have sold that car because we've still got some commitments that we need to have with that car for a couple of brands they were working with. I don't actually know what they were doing, some advertorials or something. I can't remember. It had right. Some like Kony suspension on it. And I went, well, what do you mean? I just bought it. I think I worked on car. And they were like, well, we kind of need it back. I went, well, you can buy it back off me then. And they went, okay, well, you bought it. I said, yeah. I said, I just bought it for 900 quid. And they went, okay, so we'll just put the money back in your account. I said, no, the price has changed.
you cheeky twat.
No, I absolutely did. I said, it's 1,800 quid. They said it's not worth 1,800 quid. I said, you're absolutely right, it's not. And they said, but we need it. And I said, okay, so you need to pay me 1,800 quid then. And they did. So I doubled my money on a car that I owned for about 36 hours.
I cannot believe you had the brass neck to do that.
I didn't need the car. I only bought the car because I knew I could get it cheap. And as soon as I drove it away, it was heavily disappointing. So I was like, do you know what? I was only going to clean it up and put it on eBay. And they saved me the hassle. They bought it back off me, and that was that.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's
happy
just
days.
Made me think. I just suddenly thought of a question that I need to ask you, which is, because you've bought and sold a lot of cars in your life, haven't you?
Yeah, it's about 140, I think.
Jesus.
Yeah.
My question for you...
I don't do it so much at the moment, sadly. I'm missing it.
Well,
I live through others.
What's the least you've ever paid for a car?
Well, it was a penny.
What?
It was a penny. It was actually, strictly speaking, my brother did the deal. I was piggybacking on my brother's deal. My brother moved to Bournemouth with his now wife, and he went to buy some chickens. Yeah, he went to buy some chickens off this guy who was, a sort of farmer. And when he turned up to buy, they were buying, I don't know, a dozen of them or six of them, and they were going to have their own eggs in the garden. There was a Mercedes 123 in the corner of the field estate, and it had the windows down, and there were chickens pretty much hopping in and out of it. And my brother was chatting to the guy, and he said, "What's going on with the Mercedes in the corner?" He said, "Oh, it's my wife's car. She stopped driving it about 4 years ago, and it needed, I don't know, a master cylinder or something. And, I just parked it there. I haven't really thought about it. But unfortunately, one of the windows kind of went down or fell down, and the chickens have just been using it." So my brother said, "Do you mind if I have a quick look?" So my brother went over and looked at it. And it had water in the footwells, but it didn't look rotten. I think he'd caught it, and it was a 200T. And he said, "Would you sell it?" And the bloke was like, "Well, it's not really worth anything." So the guy said, "I mean, it just sounds made up, but I promise it's true." The guy said, "Well, look, I'll tell you what I'll do. You buy a dozen chickens for the price that we've agreed, you can have the car for a penny." So my brother was like, "What do you mean?" He said, "You can have the car for a penny. You've got to take it away, though." And Greg was like, "Okay." So we came back and got a dozen chickens. And then the day later, he came back and he'd already phoned me because he knew I was looking for a cheap second car. And he said, "Johnny, I've got you a Mercedes estate," because Greg had a couple of them. And I said, "Oh, brilliant. How much?" He said, "Well, it's kind of free, but it's full of water and chicken mess." And I paid my brother to drag it home, go through the brakes and the steering, and he took the entire interior out and pressure washed the interior on a really warm summer week, drip dried it, and then we put it back together, and I drove it every day for about 6 years.
What?
About 6 years. Yeah. That was the car the bin men reversed into and
wrote
off.
Oh, it was that one.
It was that Mercedes. So it was nearly dead anyway, but we resurrected it. Oh, yeah, we drove that.
Proper survivor car.
That car was brilliant. That car now lives in the Netherlands. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, when we went into recession, when was that? 2008? 2009? Yeah. Yeah. I decided to sell it because I had a different daily driver, and I'd collected a few parts to kind of do a bit of a rolling resto on the Mercedes. Eventually realised I couldn't justify doing it. Britain was in a recession. I put it up for sale for not a lot of money. I mean, like, I don't know, 600 quid, I think it was.
Well, you're still 599 quid pence up on the deal. So.
Yeah, yeah. I'd done loads of work on it myself over the years with secondhand parts and stuff. It was a great car. This guy phoned me up and he said, "I am in Rotterdam," or I think he was. And he said, I'm a trader and I buy strictly 70s and 80s Mercs. He said, "I'm coming over in the next month. If I buy it, will you hold it for me for 3 weeks?" I said, "Yeah, no problem." So he paid me instantly and he came and collected it with two other friends. They'd already got two other Mercedes. They were going to drive all three back. And I said, "You know, it hasn't been on the road for about a year." And he's like, "Yeah, it's no problem. Does it run?" I said, "Yeah, it does. It starts and it runs. But just thought I'd let you know. It doesn't have an MOT or anything." He said, "It's no problem." He got in it and drove it straight down to Dover and then got on the ferry and then got off the other side and blew it up.
What?
And then phoned me up in a rage going, "The car you sold me is faulty." I sold it to you for spares or repairs. And B, what have you done with it? Because I've driven that car all over Europe and it's been really nice. I said, "How fast have you been driving it?" He said, "I've been driving it at about 100. I said, "100 what? Because you do know that it's miles an hour on the speedo." And he went, "Oh, I've been driving it at I thought it was 100 kilometres. He'd been driving it like flat out, having it And this poor thing, it'd done a lot of miles when I bought it, and he'd just driven it with his mates in a S-Class in front, just like at VMAX all the way down to Dover, and probably cooked it. But he was furious with me. I'm like, he said, I want some money back. I said, I'm not giving you anything back. You've bought a cheap Mercedes that needed work, and you've driven it like a complete bastard back to the Netherlands. So he had to get his mate in the S-Class, apparently, to tow him from France to the Netherlands. But yeah, anyway, he got it restored. He was going to restore it.
And, good. Oh, well, I'm glad it had a happy ending.
But... yeah, was that story worth it? I don't know. I feel like I've sort of said too much. Was it interesting? Or
you know, I suppose technically I can beat your cheapest car you ever bought, because I once had a free car, which was that Lexus LS that I had for a bit.
You did get given that, and that's a really nice free car.
Yeah, well, see, there's a similar sort of story behind that as there is with your Mark III Golf and the accounts department at EMAP Publishing, because that car was a first-generation Lexus LS400. And
I love those cars.
It wasn't in the finest condition, but nor was it in bad condition. It was perfectly serviceable. And they'd bought two as props for one of Jeremy Clarkson's Oh No, Everything's Exploded DVDs that he used to make back in the day. And one of them got shot with machine gun fire or something and blown up, which was a scrapper. And then a sort of cosmetically much better hero car had been bought to do some on-road driving shots, and it was road legal and all that. Yeah. And that was the car that was then just... it ended up in the yard of a mechanic that we used to use for fixing stuff up on Top Gear.
Right.
And I was talking to him once, just casually, about... I was like, I really fancy just getting a nice, big, bargy old car for a bit, just wafting about. I think because I had a Mitsubishi Evo 10 as a long-termer from Evo magazine, and I didn't particularly care for it, and I was a bit sick of sporty cars.
I remember, you were blue hot and cold with that car, or just cold.
Yeah. Well, much like, I think, the air conditioning system in that car, I blew annoyingly tepid. But I decided to get, I wanted to get something squidgy for a little bit, because I was sort of going to have a gap between long-termers, I think. And I...
did you have a Luxo Barge Gap Yar?
Gap Yar.
Yeah.
yes. And I was talking to this guy about it, and he went, well, I've got an old Lexus LS in my yard that's left over from one of Jeremy's DVDs. Why don't you come and have a look at that? So I did, and it was actually nicer than I expected. And I went, well, I guess I should get in touch with the producer of those DVDs and see if he'll sell it to me. And this mechanic went, yeah, that's all right, I'll call him for you.
What?
And I'd forgotten that this mechanic, he had a strange relationship with the truth sometimes. And basically, he came back from what I believe to be a phone call with the producer saying, yeah, he says you can just have it. So...
you just had it?
Just had it. And then a few months later, I happened to see the producer of these DVDs I bumped into, and I went, oh, by the way, thanks very much for that Lexus, it's brilliant. And he went, what? Was like, that freebie Lexus that you said I could just have. And he went, I didn't say that. And it all got a bit awkward.
Oh gosh.
And I had to say, but the mechanic said he'd spoken to you and you said it was all right for me to take it. And he went, don't remember that. No, I think we'd have probably just sold it. And I was like, well, I've got it now, so that's that. And the V5 was in my name by that point, which I know doesn't necessarily...
means you're the custodian, doesn't it? Not the guardian of the vehicle.
Yes, you're the registered keeper, but that's not the same as, you know... it doesn't say anywhere on the V5, the name at the top of this is not a thief. But yeah, due to a slightly... less than truthful man with a free Lexus. But it wasn't me. I took it in good faith, and I had that car, and then I did sell it for cash money, so I was kind of up on the deal. But I sold it to a guy who used it to do those cross-Europe banger rallies that were very fashionable for a while.
It's too good for that.
Yeah, well, he I think the car still exists. He had it for ages. He painted it like the General Lee.
Oh, that's cool.
He got loads of stick, I think, the first time he went on those rallies, because, A, he was, you know, sort of driving down to like Naples or something in the summer, and his was the only car on the whole rally that had air conditioning that worked. Because, of course, all the other shitters, even if they had an air conditioning button, it wasn't connected to working air conditioning.
Oh, so is it like when the Nissan Skyline was outlawed from the Bathurst Australian race because it was just too a bit good. Too good?
Yeah.
So they were like,
well, also,
we don't believe you got it cheap anyway.
I gave this guy a receipt for the amount that he paid me for it. It was all legit and above board. And, you know, we weren't trying to deceive anyone, but no one believed that, even if he produced the receipt, that he wasn't bullshitting, that he'd managed to get this really quite nice car for, I can't remember what the budget was. I think it was like 300 quid or something. I just sold that car for, because it was still 300 quid I didn't have before, you know. It's like,
brilliant.
And that car didn't cost me anything to run particularly. It was good as gold. I always thought the chassis was a bit baggy, and it was just because the shocks were really worn out or something. But then I had to go in, Lexus UK have an original LS on their heritage fleet, and I had a go at it once, and it felt exactly the same. So,
oh, did it?
I think they're just like that. It even smelt the same as well.
I still would like one, and I feel like it would be a car that would tighten up nicely with some adjustable eyebacks or something, or, you know what I mean, like Bilsteins. If you really put some nice damping into it, it wouldn't ruin the ride, but at the same time, it would tighten it just enough for it to not roll like a bastard when you're pressing on. Or maybe I'm
it
just...
It did roll.
Did it?
It really did roll. Yeah, it was full. It was very roly-poly.
Because it was American spec, an amusing way. Kind of body control.
Yeah, a mate of mine, I gave him a lift once, and he went, this car reminds me of a New York taxi, which back then were all Crown Vics, I think. So
yeah, they would be, yeah.
It had got that sort of lovely, sloppy, separate chassis feel to it, even though it wasn't. But I'd like that car. I only had it for a year. Then I think I got another long term.
Should we? If we get to a point where Smith and Sniffers may be, let's say, averagely successful, should we chip in and buy one?
Yeah, they're not very much now, are they? In fact, there's one.
They've gone up though. They've gone up.
Do you remember the follow up? Well, not the follow up. So mine was the first generation. Then there was a sort of second-ish generation, which was broadly the same looking, but sort of they'd flattened off the front and the back, and to my mind is the nicest looking.
Is it still the 400 or is that the 430?
Yeah. Well, then there was the 430. There's a 430 for sale near my house at the moment, and I think it's about $2,500. I know, I do find myself looking at it and
it's
going,
it's too high, Rich. Back off.
I don't know. It looks tidy, except for, have you ever noticed that Toyota and Lexus, from sort of the past, I don't know how they are now, but the past 20 years, maybe a bit more, their build quality is generally impeccable, but they somehow never found a lacquer that could stay on alloy wheels.
Yes.
Their alloys always go scabby.
They do. Yeah, they do. Well, one little chip or curb and then it's curtains, isn't it, really? It starts to spider crack.
It's like psoriasis of the wheels.
It's exactly it. Yeah, it's like, is it old people with liver spots? It's kind of that, isn't it? It's because Lexus has always been a bit retirement spec. It would be the liver spot of the alloy.
Hey, there's a rented house on my street, and it's just the old occupants have moved out, and some new people have moved in. There's some young people. There's like four sort of 20 something. I was going to say kids. It sounds like such an old farty thing to say. But
that's
they are
very old farty thing to say.
Young adults have moved in. Yes. And one of them, I've noticed, has got an X-Reg Toyota Corolla 3-door.
Oh.
And I'm slightly fascinated by it because I was like, now, where's that car? That, to me, smells of that's a parent's old car that's been handed down.
Yes, 110%. That's a granddad, that's a grandpa car.
It seems to be. I heard it start up the other day, which is how I discovered that these new people have got this car. That I heard it start up and it's petrol and it sounded very smooth, very sweet. And I just thought, I bet that's running beautifully. It looks, it's quite tidy, not immaculate, but it's tidy. And I was like, would it be weird to welcome them to the street by asking to have a go in their car?
I think that would be exceptionally strange. I think that would be like Friday night dinner levels of strange, I would say. Although, now that you've just said it, I actually want you to pop the question to them. Is it bug eye or is it post bug eye?
It's bug eye.
Is it? So it's the 3-door bug eye.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's something about those that I don't mind. They are, they're a cockroach. That's a proper, yeah, like, you know, very, very modest three-door cockroach you've got there. That, in fact, that's how you should introduce the conversation, yeah, to him.
Hi. I notice you've got a cockroach. What? Where? No, I'm talking, of course, about your car. Mm. Now, oh, they've slammed the door. I was going to say, just again, in this new section of the podcast that's suddenly called Things from My Neighbourhood, I was walking the dog this morning, and just down around the corner, there's one of those current-shaped Ford Transit Connect vans, you know, quite nice,
yeah,
looking ones.
Good looking, yeah, I like it.
Parked at the curb, and then I noticed that there's a cable coming out of the house that it's parked outside.
Oh.
And it runs up to the Transit Connect and in, bizarrely, in through the sliding cargo door on the side.
Right.
Which is shut, obviously.
Yeah.
And I was like, now what's going on there?
Tools.
And then as I got level with, well, I thought it's charging some tools, but it seems a weird way to do it. But then as I got level with the passenger compartment, there's a dehumidifier on the driver's seat and a massive roll of kitchen paper on the dashboard. And I was like, what's happened?
I know what's happened.
Well, it's wetness, isn't it? But why and how?
They've done what I did a couple of years ago. You know, when the weather's warm and you pull up outside your house and you maybe leave a window down because you think, I'm going to pop back out later today and it's all nice and warm. And then you don't go out that day, you forget. And then there's a rainstorm in the night. And I bet that's what happened. He's left a window down or a door open and there's been a biblical rainstorm. We've had a few, you know, there's been, yeah, a lot of thunder, yeah, about. And as a consequence, there's been like 3 hours of hard rain gone into the car. And once it's in, it's really hard to get like full on moisture out of cars.
Oh my God.
They're designed,
yeah,
to not let in and therefore not let out.
That's a good point.
They don't let water out unless it's a ropey, like off of the 70s, you know, floor pans with holes in, like a Tetley tea bag. So therefore, what you've got to do, the only way to get over it is to wait for good weather or have a storage unit where you leave the car open, fully open, doors open, and you either lift, you have to unbolt the seats and take that one piece formed carpet out and hang it up. Which is what I did. In fact, this ties in nicely with the pressure wash Mercedes interior, which my brother bought for a penny. It's exactly what you have to do because there's no other way of getting all of the moisture out of all the sound deadening and all the upholstery. Yeah, and then then it starts to go mouldy if you leave it because the spores will grow with all the food that you've dropped down the side of the seats and all the pasty hands that have touched the steering wheel and pissy hands and all that stuff because it's a tradesman's vehicle, so there's going to be a lot of pasty and piss hands. And then, there will be, you know, there will be. Well, you bloody know it, don't you? So they've just gone, well, we got to crack on with the job, and I'm not having a car that constantly steams up or sloshes. I used to have a friend's car, actually. A friend of mine had a car which used to have a consistent leaking problem, and when you used to put the brakes on, you'd hear a true slosh of water that sounded like you were next to the sea. It was amazing. And it was always a passenger footwell. He had an issue with water coming in round where the windscreen wipers were, the scuttle panel, and he could never fathom it out. So he used to just periodically lift all the carpets out and use one of these like wet vacuum cleaners, which just sucks, yeah, water out. Yeah, I mean, it's just a complete pain in the arse. I can't stand cars that leak. Classic cars that leak are unacceptable. I have to go to the ends of the earth in order to stop them from leaking. In fact, my Dodge
started
leaking.
Some of them just
leaking.
Do, don't they? I mean,
some do. When I'm not going to name names, but it's mostly...
Convertibles just leak. They
it's
just
convertibles
do.
With, you know, UV-damaged rubbers that are, yeah, about 20 years old because everything shrinks back a bit, nothing quite fits. In fact, I had a Mark 1 convertible that used to leak, but only in when it was parked at a certain angle on the street. That's when I lived in London, actually.
Was this when you filled Crouch End with...
This is when I filled Crouch End with two out of three cars being taxed. Yeah, and the Mark 1 Golf was an ex-girlfriend's of mine that I, when we split up, I actually ended up buying the car off her. But it was a, yeah, Mark 1 Golf CL. And it was a really nice car, actually, but it did used to leak at certain angles. If you parked it at a certain camber of road, it would leak. And it would only leak onto the driver's seat. So you get in it and it would feel like you'd weed yourself. And then you get out of the car and there was a patch of damp around your, you know, your, where your, where your bum's been on the seat, which is a bit unfortunate because it did look like you'd wazzed yourself during a journey.
Ah, now, this has just reminded me, yes, seamlessly flowing across this one like water on the floor of a Golf. You sent me that message about seeing a man on the hard shoulder with no trousers on.
Oh, yeah! When was that, 3 or 4 days ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there was a... I was driving back from a job, and where was it? The A43, I think it was. And I saw a guy walking along in the distance, and there was no car with hazard warning lights on. So there was, I couldn't work out that whether he'd abandoned a broken-down car or anything. And he was walking along, and when I got closer, he had no trousers. No trousers or shorts on, so he just had underpants on, but with like really smart shoes. That was the bit that cracked me up. He had sort of, you know, loafers on. So pants. That's so like pants and loafers. And it's like, what? What sort of a combo is that? What's happened?
Was a part of you tempted to aggressively pull into the hard shoulder and slam on the brakes just so you could go, excuse me, mate, where are your trousers?
It was the last 23 miles of the journey before you get home. So I was on that like, kind of autopilot-y bit. And I just couldn't, after sending you that voicemail, I just thought, I've got to work out the scenario. He didn't look in a rush. He could have been drunk, you know, a bit disorientated. I just love the way it just struck so much confusion into everybody. It was like, and I did double check with myself. So I was like, they were underpants, weren't they? Yeah, they were. They were definitely pants. They weren't like fancy shorts. They were definitely pants.
And even if they were shorts, why was he wearing them with smart shoes?
That's the thing. The shoes didn't match anyway. And he wasn't with anyone. He wasn't carrying any luggage. It was just so... And he was on quite a busy road. So it's not like he went out for a country walk and then got lost and thought, I'll just join the A43. I mean, it's just...
The A43, maybe that's where my trousers have gone.
It's just so good.
It's such a low dignity look, the no trousers with smart shoes. Trainers, somehow not as bad.
Yeah.
Smart shoes, because there was once respectability and dignity there, and it's been robbed.
What's happened?
It's possibly just... like his trousers.
Well, maybe they have been robbed, but then you've got to take your shorts off with your smart shoes still on. And actually, I find it's a false economy trying to remove trousers or shorts with your shoes still on. Do you not think?
Absolutely, every time.
It's a shit idea. You shouldn't do
it. Yeah, never. Yeah, and you always go, do you know what? I'm going to cut a corner here and do it. No.
No, don't.
It takes more time because you end up just getting all tangled.
Exactly. Don't do that. Don't be an idiot. It's a foolish idea. So, it just led to some hilarity and also confusion.
It reminds me somehow of back when I worked in a clothes shop. I remember once, and it was like a Monday morning, and a bloke came in and he looked dishevelled, but he did have all his clothes on, including his trousers. But he came in and he bought a new pair of trousers and a new shirt.
Yeah.
And then came up to the counter where I was standing and went, do you sell underwear? And I had to go, yes, we do, actually. Yeah. And he went, I need some pants and socks. And I had to say, and it was like, what? I mean, I could sort of guess maybe you had a massive weekend.
And he was a bit soiled. You haven't,
yeah, but the way...
But not like that. Yeah, but maybe like that.
Maybe like that. I don't know. I can't remember if he bought shoes as well, but it looked like he didn't really need to... Anyway, it's bizarre. Strange what people get up to. Well,
do you remember... That reminds me. Do you remember that old Smith & Sniff video that we that we did where that guy was asleep in his Almera with the engine running in the services car park, and he was there all day.
Oh, shit. Yeah, but we never... That wasn't, like, in our video, was it? That was just something we saw. No.
Oh, I don't...
It wasn't. Was it? It was a very cold day, I remember that, and that intermittently he would stamp the Almera's accelerator.
Oh, yeah!
To clear the... To a very high rev level.
Is it to clear the catalytic converter? He was very...
I don't know. It was...
It was odd.
Bizarre.
It was all odd.
It was all odd.
But the reason... The reason why I brought that up, because I remember he had a lot of stuff in the back of the car, you know, like belongings, like living in the car kind of feeling.
Yes.
And I went to get some fish and chips last Friday, and there was a car parked outside the fish and chip shop, and I had to stand there because you weren't allowed in the fish and chip shop because of distancing and things. And so I was just staring and analysing at this car, and it had what looked like... every piece of belonging that a person might have inside the car, but with enough space for a driver to just about get into the driver's seat and operate a car. And I just kept looking at it because it had everything. It had, like, you know, standard lamps, lots of shoes. It had kitchen utensils. And I was just looking at this car going, what? Has someone, like, called in at the fish and chip shop having moved house? That might make sense. But it was there for ages, and I was there for ages. So I'm thinking, oh, well, they've gone to see a friend. I just don't know. But you get some people, especially I've noticed in Los Angeles, people properly living in cars because it's a lot cheaper than rent, and you can buy you can buy a really big crap car. Minivan springs to mind, and you know, you can... What is it, a really bad name? Is it like a Plymouth Caravan?
Or is it Dodge Caravan?
Dodge Caravan and a Plymouth, I don't know, Poo Pirate or whatever it's called. And they're just... they're just a box on wheels. Those ones that are famously awful looking, the Ford Aerostar, which just looks so sad. And
yeah, or the Oldsmobile Silhouette.
Was it called a Silhouette?
There was a car called Silhouette, which was also... I can't remember what the other GM brand names were for it, but the one that was infamously nicknamed the Dust Buster because it looked like a portable vacuum with little wheels on it. It's just terrible.
But living
there are a lot of those people like that. Because the last time that we went to Los Angeles to see some of my wife's family, we rented a house in Venice Beach, and up the street from us, which is a strange area because on the one hand, it's sort of, there's a lot of drug addicts and stuff live on the streets there, but on the other hand, you know, it's by the beach, so it's quite hipster.
Affluent,
affluent in places. But there was up the street, it was a sort of a half-decent street with houses on, but further up there was a Chevrolet Caprice wagon, you know, the later ones.
The classic,
sort of aero shape, which I really like, and it had the wood, faux wood panelling on it.
Oh.
But given the area it was in, I couldn't quite work out. It seemed like it had a bit of stuff in the back, and I was like, is that someone who's down on their luck, or is that, in fact, a hipster who's made a conscious choice to get that car? It's around there, impossible to tell.
Or is it an undercover cop stakeout vehicle? You know, and they've been staking out for a very long time. I think they've traded all there.
Yeah, she's been on such a long stake.
Like since 1992.
The radio's broken. He doesn't even know. They're going to go, come back in and get a different squad car. We're phasing them out. Come back. And he doesn't get any of these messages. I'll get those bastards.
Yeah, he's so undercover that he didn't know the internet's been invented yet. Yeah.
One final episode of things that are near my house at the moment, or were near my house at the moment, until... recently, but for about a week, there was a Rover 600 park not far from here, which had very peeling paint on it and seemed to have a ludicrous amount of gardening equipment inside it. Like the set, you know, you say about that, well, there's only just room to occupy the driver's seat.
Yes.
It was like that.
Yes. Yeah.
It was just full of shit you'd use to do gardening.
I love cars like that because instead of buying a truck or a van, a little entrepreneurial person has gone, well, look, I'm doing a job and I need to buy the cheapest car possible to do door-to-door stuff. And you end up with a completely inappropriate car. I absolutely love that.
There's a street that I walk down sometimes with a dog where same sort of deal, but with a Subaru Impreza wagon.
Ooh.
First generation.
Yeah.
And yeah, it seems to have a lot of gardening things in it. And I always go, what are you doing? You could have got a bigger estate than that. But maybe they're not. They may then do small gardens.
I think it's, you need to do a whole like tour of London. Let Richard take you by the hand and lead you through the streets of London. He'll show you shitters, which are full of strange belongings. And then you can go, what?
On that note,
because
you remember ages ago when we did it, well, early this year, we did that Smith & Sniff video where we went and looked for old money cars in sort of around Primrose Hill in London, foggy London town.
Leafy London, affluent London, yes.
But did you get that picture I sent you yesterday?
Oh, the 80s Aston?
The most old money thing I've seen in ages, yes. The 80s Aston Volante, slightly shabby, outside the massive house in Hampstead. Also slightly shabby and thick with ivy to the point where you'd be scared to take it off in case the house came down.
But
the shabbiness of both of them and the sort of unselfconscious way in which these two very, or potentially very valuable things had sort of been treated with, not contempt, but just not
looked after,
pristine
at all.
Love. Yeah, well, yeah. And it's on just on the hill up into Hampstead, so it's
worth
sort of
a
primo
fortune.
Neighbourhood. Yeah, oh my God, both of those
That's
things. I mean,
weird...
those Astons aren't cheap anymore.
So on the one hand, do you think the person's inherited it and they're just totally oblivious to the monetary value? Because you think someone could just knock on their door and go, I'll give you 10 million quid for your house as it sits right now. And you could go, what? Really? I've just had to defer on my electricity bill again. All right.
Maybe. I don't know, but it's something I'm sensing old people or old person.
But also, if
and
is it convenient to drive around the city in like probably what's a fogged up, almost certainly leaky early 80s Aston drop top?
Well, yeah, talking about cars that leak, and a neglected 1980s Aston Volante.
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to guess that's not watertight.
Oh, honestly, the carpets and the underlay, I mean, honestly, if you put some hydroponic lights in there, you'd have growth within minutes. Mm. Within minutes, it would be Little Shop of Horrors just growing out of the Volante carpet. It's just
the only thing that threw me off about that car that I thought maybe is not totally old money, if you're being picky, is that it had a private reg on it. But then it wasn't a flashy private reg. It didn't sort of try and say someone's name. It was just a sort of...
Well, that would be
three letters, three numbers.
Family heirloom. It's family heirloom.
Yeah, it was on great grandfather's Hispano Suiza.
It will be 1910s. Or it'll be when grandfather set up the first branch of the shopping empire, as was. That was on the first delivery van in 1910, and it's been in the family ever since. And that's that. That is it. That's that. They've had the number plate in the family for 100 years.
Yeah.
And they just put it on anything. In fact, previous to the Aston Martin, it was on a Morris Marina coupe. Because they just had one for a couple of years and that was absolutely fine.
Yeah, lean times in the mid-70s. It wasn't the done thing to show off, what with the oil crisis.
Well, that's right.
Three-day week and what have you. So we bought one of those funny little cars because...
it was vulgar.
I always
liked
marinas
petrol.
Because he... kept his boat there, so yeah. I don't know. I mean, anyone who knows the road up from Swiss Cottage in London up to Hampstead will probably have seen this car. It's that. I mean, I've been meaning to take a picture of it for ages, and then I saw it at the weekend, and I made a mental note. Then I was coming past it last night in a taxi, and I took a picture for
you.
I
need to come and see you. We need to go on another tour.
We need to go for a little wander around. I found. Well, I'll tell you about some other time, but I found another couple of streets that are. Quite fertile car spotting ground for various mad reasons, including this massive house near the Bishop's Avenue, which again, if anyone knows London, is like sort of
that is
insanely valuable seat that is a street that no one actually lives on because all the houses are bought as investments and it's pretty horrible as a result. But just behind there, one of the more populated streets, very big house with an in-out drive, and on it, as I went by yesterday, was a really fucked up Jaguar XJ40 with loads of trim missing. And again, it's like the wet van that I was talking about earlier on. You just kind of go, how and why?
What's going on?
What's happened? Backstory, people. I need backstory. And I will put it alongside the backstory from the neighbours who no longer speak to me because I wanted to go in their Corolla.
You need to. go in that Corolla. I can't compete with these stories. I don't think I've got immediate to me. I don't think I've got any strange.
Yeah, but you live in a low population density area. I mean, it's beautiful for many reasons, clean air and quiet and all that. But when it comes to spotting mad or khaki cars, your opportunities are slightly reduced just by the sheer density of fewer people.
Yeah, I've got the sort of like strangely attractive woman that drives past in a Vauxhall Frontera, and then we've got there's a guy around the corner who. I refer to as non-stop smoking guy, and he smokes all the time in his cars with the windows up, and he has four cars and they're both identical pairs. So he has a pair of Hyundai coupes in silver, and he has a pair of Alpha 156s saloons in silver. So it's like, what are you doing? You've got a pair of the same car and then a pair of the same car. And I thought they were like donors at first. I thought, we just bought a spare for that one because, you know, Alphas. And he's bought a spare Hyundai coupe because they're about 300 quid. And I don't think so. I think he drives all four of them, and I just can't work him out. And I've never asked the question, but he's non-stop smoking guy in the Alpha. Quite cool car taste, but...
Maybe he just rotates them because the smell of... cigarettes becomes overwhelming after a while, so
yeah.
He airs one out.
He does air
two suits.
He does air one out. I haven't
the
noticed.
Suit's got a bit smelly. I'll put on the other suit for a bit because I do smoke with the window. Smoking with the window shut. Bloody hell! I mean,
I know
that's pretty hardcore in itself.
It's dirty, isn't it? It's it's
dirty.
Almost like a song title. Smoking with the windows up, because you immediately you can get an idea of the thickness, the fog. Cancer fog going on inside that car. I just feel like the headlining is crying out for help. Help me. Help me. I'm never
so
going to be the
yellow.
Same. I know.
Please.
My brother, one of my brother's schoolmates, his parents, or his dad was a doctor, and he used to drive around in a Mazda 323, kind of late 80s, I'm going to say, E-Reg. And he's a doctor, and he used to windows up smoke everywhere.
Wow.
Everywhere. Yeah, you couldn't see through the windscreen and out through the back window. It was, there's too much fog going on in the car. Too much fog.
Every time he got out, it looked like he was on Stars in Their Eyes.
It's exactly. Every time he got out, it was like, oh, Top of the Pops too. Yeah. It was really, 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 really weird. That poor Mazda's headlining didn't stand a chance. Never.
Well, anyway, through the fog of our conversation, I now see the opening door of the end of the podcast. That is the shittiest metaphor I think I've ever
done. It was quite bad.
Yeah. I'll try and pull things back. But anyway, suffice to say, thank you, as always, for listening. If you like what we're doing, then please express that through the clicking of some like button somewhere or other, and indeed subscribing to us. Three other pieces of information I have to give you. Johnny has a solo YouTube channel called Car Pervert. You should go and watch the videos there. They're excellent. I have a book out called The Medium-Sized Book of Boring Car Trivia by Sniff Petrol. That's available on Amazon. And the largest port in Britain by volume of traffic is Felixstowe. I'm just chucking in some extra bits now because I got bored of doing the same old shtick.
I quite like that. A little bit of extra value. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's a bit of take home because, you know, just in case there wasn't any in the rest of the podcast, which, you know, let's be honest, there often isn't. So
there's a
there
lot.
We go.
Oh, anyway. Can I add some value?
Yes.
Don't forget, there is a YouTube channel, which is how Smith & Sniff started. And we have a huge backlog, over 110 of them, I think, videos. So if you fancy watching any of those, they're there. They're probably always going to be there.
Yeah, and the podcast goes up there as well, in case you your preferred consumption medium for audio is a video format. So, have at it. But until next week, thanks for listening. Talk soon, mate.
Bye, Rich.
Bye.
It's kind of free, but it's full of water and chicken mess.